We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I am Eugene.
And I am Ben.
And tonight we are going to face the Raven. Well, not us personally. We're not going to face the Raven. We're going to sort of face in the direction of facing the Raven and watch people face the Raven, which is a story from Doctor Who by Sarah Dollard. I want to get that right once, just in case, during the course of the story. Rigsy's back. Clara's companion from last year's quite very good flatline. And he's got a tattoo on his back, which is going to kill him, which actually kind of amuses me as an idea for tattoos. And they call in the doctor, and then they track down Diagon Alley, which is hidden somewhere in London. And it turns out that Asildur and or me is being... however she is, and it's an intricate trap to capture the doctor, but unfortunately, Clara's hubris kills her. And such is the story. Anyway, spoilers, by the way, Clara's snuffed it finally. So terribly, I'm told from all of the interviews and things, it's an incredibly powerful, emotional farewell scene when Clara leaves. How'd this story grab you?
Empty.
Thank you. Thank you. By the way, Ben and I don't discuss these in advance.
No.
This was about as meh and as
this,
I can imagine.
Yeah, it really was.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't hate it, but boy, I had to watch it twice. Literally twice in a row, and it just left me – it was hollow.
Mm-hmm.
Completely hollow.
That's actually a good word for it.
Yeah, and it kind of we'll go into the details about it, but that's really where I'm at with it. It's hollow, and of course I came into this thing with a little bit of a preconceived idea, and that's all based on the wonderful Grand Moff, who made the fatal mistake of saying there will be tears. Every single time he says there will be tears,
there won't
be, at least not from me. I won't feel the least bit verklempt over the loss of Clara.
And it's not even because I dislike Clara, because I don't dislike Clara.
And that's exactly right. I do not dislike Clara. In fact, I thought for the most part, I thought Clara was pretty strong, but that does not redeem the episode in its other failings.
Yeah, we're on a yeah. it was, you know, the I don't even know where to start. So
and I understand, I really do, because this episode left me just kind of with a big huh.
I mean, it is all about Clara leaving, in a way, but really.
That's a side story, really. If you want to think about it, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, her death is sort of an incident. It's a footnote.
Now, I read that this story, originally as submitted, had nothing to do with Clara's exit. It was a story for Doctor Who that was submitted by Sarah Dollard, who is a new writer for this series, and they liked it so much they decided that this would be a good place for there to bring in the death of the companion as part of the Doctor Who story arc for the series. And so that bugs me, because if I look at it and I say, well, if we took the death of Clara out of this episode, what's left?
Okay, well, what we've got is something that is the most convoluted storytelling out there. We start, obviously, as you pointed out, we've got Rigsy, who's got this tattoo. After experiencing retcon, he has this need to want to contact the doctor through Clara, which he does. And this is all one enormous, big, elaborate case of subterfuge just to get the doctor there because he can't pass up a mystery. And then it all boils down to Mayor Me has got a deal with the Shade. Oh, and I want to get back to that in a second. And she wants his confession dial. Okay, it's the second time we've seen that now. And somebody wants him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I'm guessing, the fact that they wanted him that's obviously the setup for Heaven Sent and possibly even Hellbent.
Right.
But it's just this huge, ridiculously convoluted scheme that just, I could not really buy it. It felt too convoluted, in my opinion, for simply the sake of these people need the doctor or whoever it is. They want him. And Ashildur wants his confession dial. You know,
no, I think they want the confession dial too.
Well, maybe they do, but she took it from him.
Well, I think that was intended, you know, that she was supposed to get it and turn it over with the doctor. So I didn't get the impression that was in any way something she was after.
She was still holding on to it when he got beamed up.
Well, that sounds more like a continuity error.
and when I saw it the second, how many times did you watch it?
I only got through it once.
Okay, so here, this is weird. I actually saw it twice. Yeah, and the second time, it felt more like she wanted it. She wanted that confession dial. Not so much the doctor, but she's heard about it. So it's not just idle curiosity on her part, but yeah, there's more to her taking the dial, but she was holding on to it when he got beamed up, and I believe that was deliberately done.
Hmm.
But still, we have this ridiculously elaborate ruse, solely for the purpose of snagging the doctor because he just couldn't pass up a mystery. I don't know. I can't help but think that there would have been much better ways. Maybe they would not have made for, I say this as a joke, interesting storytelling. But it just was so unbelievably absurd that I just thought it was hollow. Because it felt like, you know, like a cake with nothing but icing. And yet there's nothing inside.
Right.
It was very weird for me.
Yeah. You get to the point where really the crux of the story is it's let's face it, it's sort of a regeneration story. So bear with me here. Rigsy last year was kind of Clara's companion when she was playing Doctor in Flatline, right?
Right. I mean,
she played that same role.
Yeah. She was Doctor. He was her companion.
And we've been being smashed over the head with a disembodied limb throughout the course of the entire year about Clara being reckless. And I want to talk about that more later. But I mean, it's not even really foreshadowing when you're actually taking big buckets of paint and splashing them up on the wall and writing the words, Clara's going to die. I mean, it's so incredibly unsubtle foreshadowing.
There was nothing subtle about it. I mean, they weren't even telegraphing it. They were screaming it from the mountaintop that she was going to die.
Right. But she makes a point here in this story. It's like, doctor says, well, you were reckless and why not? You're reckless all the time. Absolutely true. Although, again, it's kind of back to that whole thing with the Osgood thing. Is like, do you have the human here, or do you have the ability, the alien that has the ability to shoot lightning bolts and change shape? Do you have the human here, or do you have the 2,000-year-old Time Lord that's incredibly brilliant and has the ability to regenerate his body? You don't. She effectively did what the doctor would have done in a regeneration story. She mm-hmm. sacrificed her life. She did the Ninth Doctor Rose mm-hmm. parting.
Yep.
Exactly. It's a mirror of what he did for her. The difference is Clara didn't have that lifeline.
No, even though she thought she had an out. And that's one of the interesting dilemmas that I have with this episode. As I said earlier, I rather liked Clara in this one. In fact, Keith even said the same thing, too. He rather enjoyed her. I mean, this was some of the best writing that we've gotten with that character this entire season. I mean, this was the Clara that we got last year. I would not have been the least bit bitter about the way Doctor Who had been going. So we look at what she's doing in this particular story, the recklessness that she's got, you know, from hanging outside the TARDIS just so that she can, you know, do a big overview flyby a la Google Maps or Apple Maps of London. And then, of course, there's the whole bit with the tattoo. And I, after watching it the second time, I had to ask myself, if I were in Clara's position and I knew what she knew, would I have done the same thing? And, you know, I think I would have. If I were in her place and I if I was as reckless as her, you know, having spent a lot of time with the doctor and kind of, you know, taking on this really reckless, very careless, well, not careless, but his reckless kind of behavior, would I have taken the chrono lock in an attempt to buy time, thinking that it would buy time? Well, yeah, I would have, because like Clara, I would not have known about the specific terms that me had with the quantum shade.
Which is, of course, the difference between the doctor. He understood more about the quantum shade,
right?
Obviously, than Clara did. So she's going into it with very, very little information, except basically hearsay by one guy.
And with the one little bit of guarantee that she thought she had from a shielder when she says, when she was at, oh, I promise, I guarantee nothing will happen to you. You know, assuring her that Clara, you know, that Clara was going to be completely safe and under her protection. Well, she, you know, Clara took that as gospel. And to be honest, I think I would have too. And you're right, because Clara does not have all of the knowledge and wisdom. I mean, despite the fact that the doctor can be horribly reckless at the same time, at least he's got knowledge and wisdom to balance that out with, while she does not. She relies on the doctor to fill in those gaps.
She gambled and she lost. Sometimes the doctor gambles and he loses.
Yeah.
Hence, we have 12 of them or 13. And it's really just I like that part. I'm going to say that I'm sure I've mentioned it before, but what the heck? It's not a drum if you don't beat on it regularly. That New Who has a serious problem with getting rid of companions, because companions and the doctor are too close. They are too – I don't want the implications of intimate, but we will use that term. You could have never gotten rid of Rose because she was absolutely besotted with the doctor, and killing her or would have been the logical answer to get rid of her, but Russell T. Davies wouldn't do that. Lock her in another universe. Unfortunately, he didn't keep her locked there. Martha never bought this. The notion. It's like, oh, I've just realized that this alien being that's hundreds of years old isn't actually into me. I think I will stop traveling through all of frickin' time and space and all the cool stuff that we could do just because he's not into me. Wow. No, not buying off on that one either. Donna like Rose. I get that.
Oh, the symbolic death?
The symbolic death of Donna. You had to do it because she would never have left either. I mean, what did she have in her life? The temp from Chiswick? No, not going to happen. Amy and Rory, that was even worsely contrived than the alternate universe. But again, would they have really left? No, because now Moffat set it up so that the doctor can just keep coming back and visiting them every week, and they can live their life and then go off for a month and come back and live their life and go on. So, you know, it's very problematic. So here we have the tale of Clara, the actress they just cannot get rid of. If, I'm sure we discussed this, when In Death in Deep Still Waters came along and she's there in her apartment and she's got that board with all the sticky notes and stuff pinned up on it, and she's talking to Danny Pink and she says, you know, you are the only person I'm ever going to say this to. I love you. And there's dead silence at the other end. I told a pun. there really was dead silence at the other end. But if you're looking at the board, there are things on there that could make you believe, without telling small children, that she's pregnant.
Yes.
And we had seen and listened that Danny Pink had progeny, and that it seems like Clara was the grandmother of the astronaut guy.
That was the popular theory.
Well, and it was pretty hard over the head. And of course, that I'll give this one to Moff. All right, that was very good setting up, because we have been absolutely set up that Danny and Clara have a future together, and then when they pull Danny Pink away, you're thinking he can't possibly be dead because we already know that they have this future. But if you put the thing in your head that those notes indicate that Clara is pregnant, Danny is no longer necessary, and it gives the perfect subtext for what the other reason that Clara left. I mean, yes, she's shattered that this guy is dead. Her life is never going to be the same because she's going to have a child, and she thinks the doctor has found Gallifrey. When they lied to each other at the end to protect each other, yes, Danny found his way out. Oh, that's wonderful. Yes, I found Gallifrey. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, goodbye. That was the perfect. That was the best ending.
That should have been the separation.
Companion exit they've done on New Who. That was perfect. And then they shouldn't have let her come back for Christmas. Sorry, but that was the perfect exit, and I can totally buy that one. In a way that I couldn't exactly buy Tegan coming up at the end and going, I just can't take this anymore. And off you go. So then, they brought her back for the Christmas special, and they had their two exits strategies. One, Clara's old and lived a nice full life, and that was the last we see of her, and the other is, face thing off, and I'm young again. Not as good, but it would have been acceptable. And then they had to turn her on a dime this year and say, well, now that Danny's gone, she's crazy reckless. There's nothing left for her. Yeah, the idea that she was pregnant long gone.
It was never mentioned.
It was never said.
No.
So, that's just, who knows what those notes meant? What is 3 months for?
I don't know. And as far as the Danny's progeny in looking, or listen, I'm sorry, listen, Moffat came off and rationalized that one by saying, "Oh no, there was no, he was like a descendant of like maybe a cousin." I went, "Really, Moffat? Is that what you're what you're throwing at us right now? He's like a really distant descendant." Okay.
Before we end this podcast, remind me to talk about the interview that Moff gave about Day of the Doctor that I just read.
Oh, I read it too.
Today. Yeah, I want to talk about that.
Oh, it's a hoot.
Anyway, so yeah, they've basically told yet another story for Clara, and this is the reckless Clara. And no, this ending wasn't as good.
No,
this
wasn't.
Was not as good an exit for her as even her other two exits.
And why this incessant need now to have to, as you point out, I mean, put the companions into some sort of really terrible trauma. It's almost beginning to feel like that they have to die. And
would you leave? I mean, this is a serious question. If you were traveling with a doctor, what would it take to get you to say, yep, I've had enough of this? What would it take?
That's a good question.
Oh,
I'm
on Gallifrey and I met this guard and I just happened to fall in love with him. I'm gone. You know, it's
all of time and space, man. That's a hard thing to pass up.
When you look back at companions like Ian and Barbara, they have a perpetual longing to get home. And of course, they're in no control of where they go. So every week they end up at someplace extremely dangerous and they're likely to die. And yes, it's an amazing adventure, but at the same time, it's that dangerous roller coaster ride where you never know if you're going to open that door and die instantly with the doctor. And we had the companions who were younger. These are people who are young and need a mentor until it's time for them to start their own lives. That's kind of what they were, Vicky and Susan and Dodo, and even, to a lesser degree, people like Ben and Polly, who are still very kind of, Jamie, formative kids. Because the doctor has this older, but when you get to Rose, there is such that we're basically equals. The show is equal between the two of us, and it's a partnership, and it's, it's like, at that point, you're just not convincing that they are going to grow up and leave the nest. And that's kind of what you got with the companions in the old days because of that mentor attitude instead of the partner attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, it's like, I would have no romantic interest in the doctor whatsoever, but hell, I'd leave. I would really have to be convinced that I was going to seriously die
before I would go, yeah, all right, fine.
Well, and I think that's kind of, I mean, while it may not have been presented very well, I think that might have been where Tegan's mindset was at. With that whole episode with the Daleks, it was like, as she said, as like her uncle or her grandfather told her, you know, if it's no longer fun, don't do it. And something about that entire episode for her was so traumatic that it was like the luster became, you know, it was, there was a lot of tarnish that was on there now. And she just thought, I can't do this blindly anymore.
I would have liked to have seen that over two or three stories.
It would have worked better instead of just kind of throwing
really
at us.
It showed up in the last scene.
Yeah, it was
problem.
Way too abrupt. I get it. And in many ways, it makes sense. But it was way too rushed. You know, and then you look at like Sarah Jane. I mean, well, she got booted
she
out.
She had no choice.
She had no choice. The doctor said, you know, I'm going to Gallifrey. You cannot come. So I get that. Nyssa, there's a good mentor relationship. You
now
know,
I can do something.
I can do something here now on Terminus and help these plague victims. I have the means to do so. So everything that she had, you know, that she learned originally on Trakkan and that she had learned with her time with the doctor, you know, not just in terms of scientific knowledge, but
compassion,
you know, how to be, I hate to use the word hero, but, you know, how to go in there and help people.
Turlough found his family.
Yeah.
His lost family and his birthright and left. I mean, that makes perfect sense. Perry, well, and
oh, we'll forget Perry.
What's her name? Not by. Mel. She likes a bit of rough, that's all. And but anyway, yeah, it's just this problem. So, yeah, Clara kind of had to die. I mean, there just wasn't any way around getting rid of Clara unless they were going to dump her in E-Space or something and say, well, you're not going. Because there's another one. Romana probably would never have left the doctor. They were the equals. That was as close to equals as they ever got.
True.
So we have the death of Clara. I hope, I very much hope that Clara's speech, nice of them to give her so much time, so we do not have to go through this whiny ass doctor, I've lost another companion, I'm going to be a hermit and live in a cave and eat waddles.
Yeah, I'm.
We've gotten
once again,
time and time again.
I'm so fed up with the angst over what the doctor has just
woe
gone through.
Me.
You know, woe is me. Yeah. I mean, we got that enough with David Tennant when he had to say when he said goodbye to Rose. I mean, he was a bit of a basket case, which is why
your
he never got close
move
to.
Out and leave.
That's why he never got close to Martha.
Right.
And always kept her at arm's length, and it was always okay. Just one more adventure, and then you're off.
Kids are going to grow up and move out, Doctor. That's the way it works. And all of your companions are kids compared to you. Period. End of discussion.
That's true. Yeah.
There is, it's hard to understand just how creepy the notion of the Doctor and Rose really is. So I'm pretty sure that there's like this sort of unwritten rule that you're not supposed to date someone that is any younger than half your age plus 7 years.
It does kind of call into question some more. You know, there's a bit of a moral ambiguity here now.
Yeah, maybe the rule's a little bit different for Time Lords, but I'm thinking a difference of 880 years might put you at a bit of a predator.
Yeah, I would see that.
So, yeah. Anyway, let's talk about Mare Me, who, when she shows up in our next episode, will be known as Despicable Me.
Ugh.
And interesting performance. Again, I am completely and utterly underwhelmed by Maisie Williams' performance.
It's like whatever.
It is. It's like it's whatever. I know they're kind of going for this sort of burnt out husk of a being.
Why am I not getting that then?
I'm getting this sort of I do whatever I have to do because that's what I've learned to do. But then when confronted with the horror of something, I really feel bad because I still have a few human emotions. But just really, it's sort of like it comes off as sort of I can't act. That's what it comes off as to me. It comes off as like, I could do that job, and I can't act. So it's really...
I just find the characters' motivations, as they're written, not very believable. And I partially blame that on Maisie's acting. And it's not that she's a really bad actress, because she's turned in some very good performances in Game of Thrones. But this was just not a very good role for her, I think. And
it could be.
It could have been, possibly. But you really described her well when you referred to her as a burnt-out husk. Now, in the case of, like, Time Lords, I mean, we look at the Doctor, we look at any other Time Lord that's been around for God knows how long. You know, living that kind of a long life, assuming that they're able to go through their entire regeneration cycle, living that long life, that's built into their DNA. It's part of who they are. Mm-hmm. They are already genetically attuned to living that kind of life. A human is not.
Right.
So we do get some aspects of how she copes. Like, she has no memory... I mean, no conscious memory of meeting Clara, but she knows that she did, and she knows that they had conversations because they're all in her journals. Okay, things like that. I can kind of get that. That's fine. But I'm not getting the burnt-out husk. Not entirely. Because I and maybe this is me being just really cynical here, but when she does this bit of an about-face and realizes that Clara now is doomed because she's taken the Chronolock on for herself, we're getting a completely different Mayor Me. We're getting one that's showing enormous signs of compassion. And even though we know that the Doctor did tried to drill that into her a little bit about having that quality when we saw her in The Woman Who Lived, I find it difficult to swallow.
Well, I guess that was what I was trying to go at. I think, I mean, we saw the same thing in The Woman Who Lived. She was, you know, yeah, I just do what I want and I'm a thing and I don't have these emotions anymore kind of thing. But when it came to the moment when the people were being killed, that humanity came back. That empty husk proved to be more of a cocoon hiding her little sort of nascent humanity.
Well,
and that's
her humanity exactly, is hibernating is what it is, I think.
That's exactly what we see here. When she realizes that what's happened has backfired and is going to kill Clara, then she feels it. And I do get that. I think was intended as like, I had this brilliant plan. It's a little immoral, but what the heck? And then, oops, it's backfired. And now somebody who I promised wouldn't get hurt, who I like for all we, I mean, from her journal, she likes Clara. So she's sort of conveying that I like Clara, even though I don't remember her, but I'll extend that and I'll protect her, etc. And then when she realizes that's gone wrong, she definitely does feel some remorse, but at the same time, yeah, can't do anything about it. So, yeah, this is a very unsuccessful story in my, or a character, in my opinion. I think that this three-part arc of her existence has been not really interesting.
No, the only thing I can figure is that unless there is some future payoff, I mean, we've only got two episodes left plus the Christmas. I think the whole thing with the Doctor, the hybrid prophecy, all of that, I mean, that's got to come to some kind of culmination in by the time we get to the end of Hellbent. Because the Christmas episode is totally standalone. It's not. It doesn't have any real connection to the season that we've had so far. So any seeds that they've been planting, they're going to have to really reap those pretty fast.
I think you know, based on what the BBC has released about the last two episodes, I think it will.
Given that they dropped the almighty G word, for Hellbent, I would imagine, yeah, they're kind of accelerating things a bit.
Yeah.
So it's kind of it's hard to say right now. They've not entirely pissed me off to the point where it's like, well, I really don't give a crap. I don't want to see what's going to happen. I mean, there's been enough Well, I was going to say there was enough good storytelling, but let me put it this way. There's been a good enough lack of horrible storytelling to keep me interested.
A lack of horrible storytelling. Now that is faint praise indeed.
Thank you.
I thought generally, yeah, been fairly good.
I mean, there's some stories that I thought were great. There are others I thought, I never need to see this again.
Well, I think I can guess which one that is. Yeah, I think we've had a series of episodes that have been, not counting Zygons, but I think most of the others have been quite good up to a point.
Yeah.
But then they don't quite pay off as good as they could.
They don't make it across the finish line.
Yes. That's been across the board there. They're just not quite there. But anyway.
Yeah, it makes me finish watching the show and said, well, that was almost good.
I enjoyed this, but I'm left wanting something at the end of the episode. And it's not one of those wanting somethings like, yeah, I'll come back next week and I'm going to get it. I feel like I'm left wanting something that I know I'm never going to get.
Yeah.
And therein
and
lies
that
the
problem. There, that's why I said it was empty.
Right. Oh, so what I was so if I didn't finish that thought, what I'm hoping is that Clara's speech to the doctor will prevent the whiny doctor, and that he can get on with his existence without having to go through, you know, a few hundred years of poking around as travel alone now because I'm the only one man.
Everything that we've heard
playing a guitar
from Moffat sort of suggests that the doctor's going to go on a rampage at some point. Either next week or the week after.
I think in the next time trail, there was something about this that if you are part of the people responsible for Clara's demise, then I'm going to kick your butts or something. I forgot what his exact wording was. But he definitely mentions that he's going on a tear once he figures out who's behind this.
Right.
And, you know, with the G word drop there, we know who's behind it. So that's
it's a big big, big why, though.
Yeah. I think it's, I'm sure that people are going to be saying, my gosh, this is all the way back to the episode one, the 11th hour, where the doctor did this and Moff has been planning this the whole time. It's amazing. Well, we'll see. Anyway, so I don't have much more, but I think this episode was kind of, I think that Sarah Dollard was, had some, she's promising enough to have her back, and you know, don't saddle her with the baggage of a thing like killing off a companion, perhaps. I'm not really big on the fantasy angle stories, which is why one of the reasons I detested In the Forest of the Night. But this one wasn't quite as offensive.
Not entirely.
I mean, it's way too much Harry Potter vibe.
It has a lot of Harry Potter vibe, but one of the things that helped it is that at least there was some attempt at a scientific explanation as to why things were the way they were. So it allows the viewer to kind of give it a hand wave, but it's the kind of hand wave that gives you a cramp in your hand at the same time.
Yeah, and then I think, if I'm not mistaken, the guy who died with the shade,
right,
was supposed to be a Cyberman.
He was, yes. Boy, was he running fast.
Boy, was he emotional.
Yeah.
For a Cyberman.
Yeah, there's very emotional, very, very mobile.
Boy, did we save on our budget, our special effects budget on this one by giving them a perception filter.
Well, it's very funny they should do this because I remember years back when we were introduced, we temporarily had the companion Chameleon we met in The King's Demons. And the reason they didn't bring Chameleon back all the time is because, well, we can't afford to operate him. He's way too expensive. And I kept saying, you lunkheads, he can change appearance. Do that.
I have to hire a different actor.
So,
I know.
What do we finally get? We finally get that here with the Cyberman who has the death sentence. Fascinating.
Yeah.
I have to touch on my big bugaboo about this episode, and this won't be for everybody.
Okay.
But it personally offends me.
Okay.
And that is, if you're going to kill a companion, which I think is a lousy idea. But if you're going to do it for all the right reasons. Make it mean something. Then you can kind of tell maybe a really good story out of that. This was the most meaningless, empty death because Clara just simply blundered into the situation. She thought she was doing something good, that she completely screwed up, and now she's taking the bullet.
She didn't completely screw up. She saved a father. She saved a new father to go back to his family and have a life. So, I mean, she traded her life for somebody else. It wasn't completely meaningless. It was, yes, she thought she could trick her way out of it, and that makes it a blunder. But she did ultimately affect, you know, I'm not convinced that me wasn't going to let Riggsy die anyway. I mean, I got enough amoral sort of scheming empty husk of a human there that she would have let Riggsy die to preserve her place. And I have no doubt that she was going to let him die. So, I thought it was interesting how much the doctor really liked that baby at the beginning.
Yeah,
wasn't
that
kind of odd? I mean,
yeah, they really spent a lot of time on that. And then that's it.
Yeah. It's like just getting it and saying, wow, this is amazing, and then bring the baby. No, maybe you shouldn't bring the baby. But, you know, this doctor has had an affinity for babies more than – yes, Matt Smith could talk to babies too, but it wasn't like he was drawn to them or
no,
they were drawn to him.
No, Peter Capaldi, this doctor, he is truly mesmerized by them.
Right, it's an interesting character trait, and I'm not opposed to it in any way, shape, or form.
No,
it's kind of interesting to see it.
I would like to see that be more developed. I think there's a very interesting idea there that could be taken into some very interesting directions. And I thought we were going to get a little bit of that with this one, but then no, they just they bogged off and left the new human behind.
So Clara wasn't completely. Her death wasn't completely meaningless.
It just felt like it was a pointless death, though. It really felt pointless to me as I watched it.
I think
it felt it was unnecessary.
The whole scheme was unnecessary.
Well, that's true too.
Anybody dying in this scheme, really. So yeah, I mean, I get what you're coming from. This is not like she saved Earth from the dinosaur impact asteroid like Adric did.
Oh, please. That's not even that. No, that's as bad because he screwed up too. He was going to try and fix something and he effed up.
No, he did save because when he was trying to disarm the bomb and he was trying to disarm the lock so that they wouldn't impact the planet. And he was making progress, but what he did was he caused the ship to time shift. So he became part of the web of time by being the dinosaur asteroid strike. So he did save the peace conference against the Cybermen and the Earth in the 20-whatever century. It was he did do it. He just didn't save himself in the process, and he became part of history. So Adric's death wasn't meant. It was meant to be tragic, yes, but it also was meant to be a heroic end. But again, the John Nathan Turner years were not exactly known for their effective use of drama or writing. So, kind of. But this is different. This is on a more personal scale. This is somebody jumping in front of a car and saving one life, not epically saving the planet or protecting the doctor or what we would normally see. This is far more back down to that word intimate. But
I think what we get though, as you said, using the analogy of pushing somebody out of the way of a car. Sometimes when that happens, I mean, granted, the mind just kind of kicks in, and someone will push another person out of the way without really even considering the consequences because the brain hasn't had an opportunity
to
process that.
There is a difference here, yes. Clara thought she was being clever and was outsmarting it.
Right.
That's true. But I don't think it diminishes the sacrifice of trading her life for someone else, even though she thought she was going to get out of it. I mean, yes, maybe it does diminish it a little bit, but...
Well, the thing is, if we're to take a Shilder's word that she really was going to remove the chrono lock. See, everything hinges on that. If she really didn't care and she was going to have Rigsy die for the sake of the Shade, then yes, what Clara did is very noble. However, if we're to take Ashildur for her word and that she really had every intention of releasing Rigsy because all they really want, all she needed is, at least in terms of her contract with the Shade, all they really wanted was the doctor. If she's being genuine and if she's she's honest and if that's really what she was intending to do from the beginning, then Clara's death is a waste because it serves no purpose.
Okay. I think that had she gotten her way, all right, let's pretend things went the way her plan went to. It went by the numbers. Rigsy brought the doctor. The doctor figured out that the woman wasn't really dead. The doctor stuck his hand in the thing and he got trapped. And the people that she had to deal with took the doctor. In that case, yes, I think she would have removed the chronolock. I think she would have done it because she could have proved. I think she was very, very sincere when she said, I will not do anything that will cause this place to fall apart. And letting a murderer go would do that. I think she was completely and utterly sincere about that. If the doctor had not reached the point where he had gotten trapped or had not discovered that the woman was in suspended animation or whatever, in other words, he had not reached that point by the time that tattoo counted down, I think Rigsy would have died.
I agree.
She would have let him go.
I agree, but I think Ashildur was also gambling on the fact that the doctor would have figured it out.
Well, but
I mean, it's a gamble on her part too. She knows. I mean, she's got strong suspicions. That's why they set the whole mystery up anyway, because they know the doctor couldn't pass up a mystery. He just can't do that. So I think they were playing the odds, and just like Clara was, Clara lost badly. For the most part, Ashildur won, probably not in the way that she had intended. But yeah, she was playing a long game, sort of, and guessing that the doctor would have deduced all these things. She got a good read on him. He did. And that's why I keep coming back to she would have removed the chronolock off of Rigsy, which then again, as I said, if that were to completely play out, and I think there's every indication that it would have, then because keep in mind, the doctor had no idea. I mean, we've got to remember, the doctor did not know that Clara had taken the chronolock herself.
Right.
So his motivations are still based on, I must save Rigsy. He's still acting from that,
right.
That source of motivation. So if Rigsy had kept the chronolock, the doctor would have continued doing what he had done. He would have figured out what had happened with Anna, and then he would have been he would have freed her from the stasis lock. He would have been as you said, he would have been trapped. He would have been taken up. Clara would be alive. Everybody would be alive.
But that's not how these stories go. Every once in a while, something goes wrong, and somebody has to die.
But when it's an empty death, though, I mean, okay, yeah, I look at real life. Yeah, those things happen. I get that. You know what? I'm watching a television show. Don't give me real life. If you're gonna kill her, make her death have some real substantial meaning to it instead of a lot of just window dressing. Because that's what I felt I got.
Yeah, definitely did not get tears.
No, no, I was like, really. I mean, there's a lot of, oh, really? You're going down that road. Okay, fine, whatever.
I haven't teared up at a movie or a death, a character in a TV show or series or movie since Star Trek III when they blew up the Enterprise.
Yes, we know.
Yeah, that was traumatic for me.
I
was really surprised. That's the funny part. I was genuinely surprised.
You
when
weren't
that happened.
The only one. I mean, it did not happen to me, but I have plenty of friends who said the same thing happened to them, that they got very emotional when the Enterprise blew up. So it's not just you.
That was like I had a moment of being a human there for just a second. Anyway,
the
empty husk.
The truth comes out.
The empty husk just sort of fell away for a second, and there was that bit of humanity, and then it's like, okay, we're done now.
Okay, so how freaking old are you then?
I can't say.
Because you don't remember.
I don't remember. No, I think I've written down somewhere, but I don't remember where I wrote it down. So anyway, I don't have anything else about this episode. I mean, I
don't either. Aside from the one big thing that I just jumped on, I look at the rest of this, and it's a lot of near misses. Too many of them that just make the episode not all that wonderful. I mean, aside from my big issue about Clara's death, I cannot look to the heart of the story and say, this is what is wrong. Because there's too many of those little things that all add up together to make it a really just a very unremarkable episode.
I do genuinely applaud. We'll find out next week and the week after, but I think we have enough intelligence to say, and I mean military intelligence, not brain power intelligence, to say that the events that have happened here and Clara's death, whether or not she told him not to go on a warpath or not, are going to be pivotal to the ending of the series.
Without question.
I like that much better than having the big epic conclusion of the series and then the companion leaves. I mean, I think it's unnatural for everybody to leave at the end of a series. I understand why you do it for dramatic purposes. I've always thought that, and probably my favorite thing about the Doctor Who movie is that they kill off the Seventh Doctor early in the story, and not because they're killing off the Seventh Doctor, but because it always seems like the kind of thing where, you know, why is it the Doctor's regeneration always occurs at the end of the final part of the solving of the thing, when it could happen somewhere in the mid of a story, because he's frequently in danger and could be shot and then regenerate and then have to fight through the end. Dramatically, story-wise, I think that would be better, but in terms of giving a farewell to a beloved Doctor, you want to make them go out, as you say, on a big bang. And so I do applaud them for taking a companion and taking them out this way and then using that to drive the finale instead of
it is pretty unique. It is pretty unique, and it isolates the Doctor. So that's kind of interesting to see how he's going to behave on his own. I don't have any qualms with that. Again, I just come back to, I just don't like the manner in which Clara was killed. That just doesn't sit well with me at all.
So anyway.
One last thing. Hmm? I kept thinking that I was imagining things. The Shade. Is this the first that we've ever heard of them? There's something that feels vaguely familiar, but I can't isolate it.
It's the first I can think of.
I've gone all over the net to see if I could find any reference to the Shade, and there isn't in the Doctor Who universe. So
I mean, I think did they perhaps call the Shade, or it's not, they did call him the Shadow, but didn't like the Shadow's henchmen, weren't they Shades in Armageddon Factor?
Yes, I did find a lot of references on that.
So, you know, that's your Black Guardian.
Yeah, but I don't think that's what Ashildur was referring to when she talked about the contract that she had made with the Shade for the Doctor himself.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. No, I didn't think
we had seen anything before. But like I said, it felt familiar, and something in the back of my head just kept saying, you know, I feel like I should know this.
I have a feeling that this is from some other show.
Maybe.
Shade is a term for ghosts and a more poetic term for a ghost, and I have heard it used in many places, so it wouldn't surprise me if there wasn't something that's niggling at the back of your head that you've seen somewhere else that comes to mind, but I can't think of anything from Doctor Who lore apart from Armageddon Factor. No. So,
now you had something that you wanted to talk about regarding the interview with Grand Moff and the Day of the Doctor.
Yes, and this I'm going to say, I'm sorry that Simon is not here for this, because this is a discussion he and I have had a couple of times, whether it was on the podcast or on the side. Was I really, really hated? Well. The end of Name of the Doctor.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because to me, that was completely unfinished. This is that unfinished thing. The doctor jumps into his own timeline to rescue Clara, which might be the point where she no longer is the impossible girl, right? So
right.
He could be undoing the thing that's already been done. And they leap in there and he says, just this once, Clara, I'm going to save you, and holds out his hand. And then they see the war doctor, end of the episode, and we never get how did he pull himself out of his own timeline.
I know,
what
yeah.
did they do?
We really B&M'd about that one.
And I don't want to be putting words in Simon's mouth, but I think that the gist of his argument, and he can make comments in the comment section if he wishes to argue with me, was that it doesn't matter. That wasn't what the story was about, and he doesn't care.
No.
They just got out. It's the mechanics of it. He doesn't care. We just know that they got out of it because the doctor went in to save her. But here is the thing. And you know, those are two opposing schools of screenwriting, and I'm not in that camp of screenwriting, but it's not necessarily an invalid one. So I'm not making the argument that says, well, you're flat out wrong. I flat out think you're wrong, but that doesn't mean that it's flat out wrong. But it's not. But it turns out, and I cannot believe I did not see this. It's like I felt like somebody hit me in the head with a cricket bat when I read this. That Moffat, that's the story right before Day of the Doctor. Moffat wrote that as a way to do a multi-doctor story. He set him up so that in the next episode, they could use that contrivance of him being in his own timeline to meet the other doctors and have the multi-doctor adventure of some of the different doctors, whatever ones that they could get. And it's like, it's suddenly so obviously a brilliant way, because in the past, it's always required the Time Lords to bring multiple doctors together, almost always.
It always involves some external force to bring multiple doctors together.
And here you had another way for the doctor to be in a situation to cross his own timeline. It makes perfect sense. And he didn't have anything planned. He just set it up so that we are in the position of doing a multi-doctor story, depending on whatever. Now the interview goes on to talk about what the incredible gestation period of trying to figure out if they would even have any doctors at all in the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, I read there was going to be. Yeah, there was even a thought of just having Clara, and no doctor at all.
You know, if the contracts hadn't worked out, but I think that was probably not a particularly realistic opportunity. But nonetheless, then he decided to go with a different script, and so he just completely dropped the whole thing, and that is. I guess why I bring up the difference of opinion between why I think that should have been finished and Simon thinking, well, it doesn't really matter that it didn't get finished. It's like, you know, it was set up to be finished. It was intended to have some story finished, and they just dropped it and didn't bother to tell it. It's like it was so obviously unfinished work. I just can't believe I never noticed that would have been the perfect entry into a multi-doctor.
You know,
story.
And you make a really good point. It never even occurred to me either that would have been a perfect spot where you could then introduce this multi-doctor kind of tale. I never even considered it. I was more caught up in just the science of the doctor in jumping into his own time stream, and I just kept thinking, wouldn't this cause some sort of temporal quantum singularity of a sort? And it was like, wow. I mean, it's like a temporal Mobius strip or something.
I mean, you could literally have when the doctor, you know, says, and Clara says, I don't recognize him, and he turns around and looks at them, and it says, introducing John Hurt as a war doctor. That could have been the scene where they meet. You know, the next shot could have been him saying, you're not supposed to be in here or something, and we've got to do something, and the two of them have to team up. And I mean, it's absolutely perfectly. It's perfect for that with all the doctors running around, and yet they just completely
went
a different route.
I think it would have made for a far better story. You wouldn't have had to go the whole Zygon thing at that point.
I do still think Day of the Doctor is one of the best, so I'm not exactly complaining.
You're right. It's actually, I think it's a rather solid bit of storytelling, and it does kind of resolve the whole Time War nonsense. So
right.
I there were some good things that came out of it.
Yeah, I think it was funny that came out of the interviews. It's like, oh, and I can't believe I didn't see it. That's the amazing part. Because usually you spot these things a mile away.
Well, keep in mind, though, that everything leading up to it was a piece of garbage. I mean,
it was really, really bad.
It was not a good episode. No. Let's be honest. I mean, from, you know, as a whole, it was not a good episode. Bad use of the great intelligence. There was just a lot of really bad inconsistencies in the episode itself. Bad use of River Song as well. It was just a very badly written story. So that by the time we finally get to the final scene where the Doctor jumps into his own time stream, we're already so just turned off.
Yeah, that's true.
By everything that we come up with. I mean, had we been given a very good story that kind of grabs our attention and makes us want to look for things, you know, I dare say there's a good possibility that a lot of people would have thought that very thing that you just brought up, that, ooh, this would be a great opportunity to go this way. But no, because we were given pablum, we just were so disgusted by that point of the episode that, no, it went right by us and we didn't even notice it.
Anyway, since we'll probably never do another podcast on Day of the Doctor, I wanted to bring that one up while it was still fresh. And since
yeah,
we'll go out.
And it's a good point. I mean, yeah, given we just, yeah, I saw the interview earlier today too. It was interesting.
But it is interesting also in that it gives you kind of an insight into the way the Moffat writes. He has these hooks he builds and he doesn't use them.
No.
I mean, we've seen it before. And if what, you know, we may see what happens in the next two episodes may very well, tie all the way back to the 11th hour. Tie all the way back to the 11th hour in Matt Smith, and there will be people who will be going, but that's an incredible amount of planning on Moffat's part, and then there will be people who are saying, well, I think he's just left himself some hooks that he can use along the way, and I think this bit with the name of the Doctor tells us that he has been laying things down in much the same way he laid the Zygons down for later use in the Inversion Invasion. So, yeah. Anyway.
It's,
all right.
It's possible. I would say that one thing that I did enjoy out of the interview is that when came time for Moffat to really try to find a story for Day of the Doctor and he didn't have one, that there's sort of an implication that at one point he was like in a panic. And this is going to sound very mean of me, but knowing that Moffat was in a panic because he needed a story and he couldn't come up with one fills me with enormous satisfaction.
I think this is not uncommon for writers. I think, I think different styles and different ways and deadlines and terror and
well,
are,
but
are
it,
all
it,
part of the experience.
But it also kind of lets us know that Moffat is human and that he's not, I mean, we joke when we call him the Grand Moff. And a lot of people, I've heard a lot of people just kind of really wax on about how amazingly genius he really is, that he was able to craft this incredibly detailed story that goes all the way back. And wow, the intricacies and how intelligent you must be to make this whole thing work. And I'm kind of like, no, he was winging it.
He was winging it. But
and that makes me happy.
I have to say that, you know, Moffat has produced some of my favorite stories of Doctor Who, or not produced, but written some of my favorite stories.
Yes, yes. Especially during the RTD days, I thought his stories were fabulous.
And I will stand with his ability to do comedic plotting in the series coupling is the true definition of farce. He sets everything up in motion and rolling, and then it's not as good as Fawlty Towers. Fawlty Towers is still the absolute classic of the pieces are all rolling and then they just come together in that perfect storm of crush at the end of the episode, and that is the brilliance of that. Coupling is one of those shows where it is very much like that, and I love it and adore it, and you know I cannot take away that Moffat can write exceptionally well and exceptionally well threaded to come to a conclusion. But, you know, those will generally be in a single episode across the plot, as opposed to trying to weave it over 13, 26,
agreed,
39 episodes. And I think there's a little bit of, it's a different skill set that's not working anyway.
I agree.
All right, so next time I am damn sure that it's a two-part story.
I have a feeling this is a two-parter, so.
We are not coming back next week with another Doctor Who episode. That'll be in 2 weeks for the conclusion, the end, the final story of Series 9, right? Yeah.
Yeah, man, this series went fast.
It did, and then we have nothing to look forward to at River Song.
Yeah, and we have the Christmas episode. Ah, can't wait. That'll be interesting.
Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
And listeners, I do hope you'll join us again next time for Fusion Patrol.
Nevermore.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes or stop by and visit us at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fusionpatrol. Our Twitter username is @FusionPatrol, or you can just send us a comment at feedback@FusionPatrol.com. Come check out our new YouTube channel at youtube.com/FusionPatrol. Please, come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.